Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebelt. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hey, JB. Welcome on the podcast.
Well, thank you very much. There we go. We are now soundproof.
Very cool.
I don't know that we're waterproof, so it's a good thing I'm on the ninth floor and 5,280 feet above sea levels. I'm probably, even a flash flood, I'm pretty safe.
So I guess the listeners can just pay attention to who's making more noise in the background, me or you.
That's true.
I'm in the building too with over 100 families in Poland right now, and sometimes the hallways are a bit crazy. So things, you know, people running around and screaming. So. Never know.
That's interesting. What are you doing in Poland right now?
Just visiting. Just staying here for another month and heading to Thailand for the winter.
Interesting. So you inspire me because next year I want to go stay for a month or two in San Diego. But my three-year goal is to start the experiment of being in Asia and taking my work to Asia, with the possibility, depending on where the United States goes in the next 3 years, which I think we'll have a pretty good idea of right there, that I may become the expatriate and kind of spend most of the rest of my life in Asia.
Wow, very cool. Which parts of Asia are you thinking of?
Well, I've only been to 7 countries, but I liked them all.
Okay.
Well, I have to say South Korea didn't do a whole lot for me, to be blunt. now that I think about it, it's not a place I want to hang out. I don't think they're my people. But I love Thailand. I loved Thailand. So, you know, Thailand kind of has my interest at the moment.
So you mentioned depending on where the U.S. is going to be in 3 years, and you're coming from a very conscious level. Can you tell me what you mean by that?
Well, I also come from a very economic level, and I actually predicted the stock market collapse and the real estate collapse pretty accurately. And I think we might be 3 to 5 years away from a big collapse that could be bigger than the last one, because I look at interest rates and we're actually inflating ourselves, but it's not showing up because of fuel and things. But I mean, like, I'm paying a dollar more for a carton of eggs than I was a year ago, for example. Food has really gone up. But the real problem is, I mean, it'll hit the stock market, it'll hit the real estate market, of course, when you raise interest rates. But the real problem is you look at the massive amount of debt that we have at a federal level, and we have a federal funds rate of zero. And typically the federal fund rate is 4, and that's what everything's normed off of. So we have a riskless rate that provides you no return, which is the stock market's overpriced. We have real estate that's inflating in lots of places. Like, I'm in Denver, it's gone up 50% downtown in 2 years because you've got 3%, 3.5% mortgages. Those are going to change to 6.5% eventually. But the real problem is, I think once we get up about 1%, I think that's our balancing point where we can still pay the interest on the debt. But you go up a couple of percent, we can't pay the interest on the debt. And you can't raise taxes enough on the people who make more than substantive amount of money to make up the difference. Not to mention, one organization that I went to a conference with last year because a friend of mine owned it at the time had 200,000 people in it that are expatriates or looking at being expatriates, part or all time. And I run into people all the time, and it's usually more people who are interested in being successful and think about life who are on their way out of here. So I think economically, we could be in a big mess.
What's really interesting is I was just looking at your book, and the name of it is Conscious Millionaire. I'm skipping through the headings a little bit and the table of contents, and I see abundance, stuff like that. I was like, oh, wow, this is very woo-woo. And now I'm talking to you, and you're very logical. And then when I looked through some of the rest of the book, it was not. When you were picking the title of that book and the chapters, did you kind of think how that's going to come across?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, I didn't choose the title. Conscious Millionaire, I was really looking for my calling. And I got it one day. If you read the first 8 pages of chapter 1, you'll come to the last page of that, which tells you how I got it as a revelatory moment. And I've been really looking for my calling in a hot tub, seems appropriate. Looking at a Green Festival, a brochure, and seeing the word conscious and seeing Conscious Millionaire literally in my forehead. And I go, that's it. And then the subtitle I didn't choose at all. I did a survey of 42 people who were definitely my target market, and I knew about 30 of them personally, gave them different options, then came back with what they gave me, went back to other options, and literally my market chose the subtitle out of many options. And then the titles of the chapters, yeah, I know that chapter 7 can come across that way, Millionaire Inner Zone, and creating an abundance mindset, but that's exactly what you have to do. And then what I worked very hard when you read the book is that to take things that could be woo-woo and bring them down to very concrete, practical levels so that even if somebody, like in my case, I'm, you know, so broad range that I, you know, read a metaphysical book, I'm perfectly happy with it. I can read a, you know, marketing tactics book, I'm perfectly happy with that. But if somebody were to get the book and they really are coming from a little bit more the logical side, which can be a lot of guys, then I'm explaining all of this in terms of, well, there is this zone. And let's look at how Michael Phelps won with 1/1000th of a second. What's going on with all of this? At an in very deep intuitive level, he wasn't making decisions with his, you know, thought mind at that point. His whole being knew to reach, don't take another stroke. Because if he'd taken another stroke, he would have lost.
Yeah, I found that interesting because it was actually very logical when I looked in the chapter, but just when I just skimmed through it, I was like, wow, I hope this is not like The Secret just by looking at it. And it wasn't. It wasn't. So for anyone listening, the book is nothing like that. It's actually worth checking out. Another thing I've noticed is you have 3 different podcasts. Why?
Two?
I found 3 on the page. Let me look again.
Yeah, but one says coming soon.
Oh, okay. One is coming soon. Yeah. Why did you it's hard enough creating one podcast. Why did you go and try to create 3?
Well, I have 2 now, and I'm actually going to have 4. So, because I have a nonprofit, so we're going to do a podcast for it starting in January as well. So, I did the main podcast, and when I launched it, that was all I was thinking about. But in 2 months in, it was like really hitting, and I went, wow, we need to do a family of podcasts. Because what I did was I was very quickly looking at what other people were doing and realized that there are people who create a family here. Well, so immediately I started coming up with ideas for them, and all the ideas that we're coming out with, I have more ideas. So then the health and fitness kind of came out of my own journey that I really gained weight when my father died. And then when I started looking at what I was going through, I said, well, wait a minute. All entrepreneurs pretty much have some kind of difficulty with the health, the fitness, the finding the balanced life. You pick one of those and everybody's pretty much dealing with one of those at least. And a lot of people are dealing with, well, you're working till 11 at night. When did you get to the gym? When did you get the vegetables and the healthy food in your body, right? So that was the impetus for that one. And then the third one is kind of my gift to the world. Even though it's designed for entrepreneurs, my vision is going to be heard by, you know, youth. It's going to be heard by college students. And it's going to be 3 minutes a day on motivating people and affirming people to go out and live at their highest level and to live their purpose and to make their difference and to achieve that goal today. So it's really about it's actually as much, if anything, a gift to really go out and make a difference in people's lives. And then the fourth one is once a week of interviewing 18 to 25-year-olds around the world. I have a global nonprofit, consciousworld.org, and we work with 18 to 25-year-olds who are doing projects to uplift humanity and make it a better world. And so I want to highlight them as a way also to grow the nonprofit and create awareness and to champion the youth who are really doing great things in the world.
Interesting. It also said on there that when you were younger, you attended a lot of seminars. And I would imagine a lot. What are some common threads that you found between all these seminars when it actually translates to success in business and in life?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that I was kind of came out of the womb interested in personal growth. But back then, you know, in the 60s, we weren't calling it personal growth yet, especially when you grew up out in the country. And there really weren't all those personal growth books out at that point in time. I mean, they kind of started burgeoning in the 70s, which was kind of the me generation. And California was really, you know, being hot, and people were living in Haight-Ashbury. And I went out and did graduate work in LA, and I'm studying Gestalt psychology, and I'm kind of doing the California experience. And then the 80s became the real beginning of the burgeoning of all these seminars. They didn't exist before. I mean, and Tony Robbins was kind of at the forefront of all of that. So I went to everything Tony did, and I started reading Wayne Dyer and, you know, all the traditional, you know, books, Think and Grow Rich. I think the common theme between all of them is that you've got the potential inside of yourself and you can do it. That every one of us has the ability to create greater success in our lives. It's not, you know, one person, and it's not because somebody went to college, that this is an innate quality, that we've all got so much potential we're not even tapping. And I think this whole movement, because it's really a core piece of Conscious Millionaire. If you want to grow your profits and build your business, you have to grow as an entrepreneur. You've got to change your thought patterns, not just your beliefs, but the way you pattern, the way you see things, the way you look at opportunities. And you got to stretch in ways that are a lot of times very uncomfortable for you. You've got to be able to take those risks, and you go, okay, well, I'm going to go learn how to speak. And that may be very, very uncomfortable for you, but you decided something you want to do. Or you take the risk of building your first product and maybe nobody buys it. All of those require personal growth and confidence, all those pieces, but that it's all inside of every one of us, that we really have those resources, that potential. We just need some help in tapping into it and giving us some tools to do something with it.
Yeah, what are some strategies for people to stretch? Because I completely agree with you. You can't make $10,000 a month if you think in your mind that your anchor is $3,000 a month, because that's what you've been used to. So how do you help people stretch from that thinking of I'm making $2,000, $3,000, and my boss thinks of ways of how we're going to make money, to actually me doing that and getting that anchor higher?
Yeah. Well, actually, there are two things that I want to address in terms of that. And they're both going to, in this case, I'm going to focus just on the mental part for a moment. So one part is actually changing your belief system. So I don't think it's revolutionary. We all know that we have beliefs that may serve us in one time, but then they're going to limit us in another. So a belief that supports us in making 3,000 may absolutely keep us from making 10,000, because now it becomes a ceiling for us. And before it was a new floor, because it took us from one to three. So what I found from working with clients, and in my book, I created 7 categories of money beliefs, because those are incredibly you know, important to me. And I know how valuable they are. But in working with, you know, I can't even tell you the other 6 at the moment, because I've focused on one for so long, is that I found that deep down inside of each one of us, and it has to do with how we grew up, and it doesn't matter, even if you're Warren Buffett, I'd like to point out he's not a trillionaire. Right? So there's something there that, and we all know that the answer at that level is leverage for the large amount. So there's a belief, and it's either going to be worthiness or deserve. It's going to really resonate with you. I'm worthy or I deserve. And there's some belief deep in you about, and there are different levels of this belief. So it's not like you deal with it once, you deal with it and then you go to your next level and then you might need to deal with it again. But at forever, wherever you are, there's a belief that I don't deserve or I'm not worthy. And if you journal about that, you're going to come up with, just let yourself free flow. You're going to come up with something or some things, and you're going to go, oh, that really resonates with me. It'll almost be startling sometimes, because I'll work with a client on a whiteboard and then I'll go, okay, so which one of those really is the most powerful for you? And it'll just kind of jump out at you. So then you got to go, there are various different ways. I use NLP, you know, I've studied energy psychology. So there are different techniques you can use to shift those beliefs into empowering beliefs. But then there's another level that I think a lot of people don't really understand or don't think about. And it's the reason that I have a mentor who's making 10 million plus in profits. And it's the reason that I coach people typically who have not achieved, you know, some of the things that I've achieved. And I want to coach with people who've achieved things that I haven't achieved. Is there's different patterns of thinking. And it's when you're exposed to those, all of a sudden you start thinking about yourself and you start thinking about opportunities very differently. And that's a huge shift. So I go, you've got to, at every level you go to, you've got to up level both your beliefs so they're supporting you and the ways that you're thinking about life. You also have to up level your emotions about how you feel about yourself, because that's the self-confidence part. You know, you might be self-confident at 3, but not self-confident at all at 10, because that relates back to how much value do you think that you bring into the world? And am I self-confident enough that I can actually go out there and do this? And you got to work through that fear part. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, and be honest with yourself. I mean, we all have fear of rejection. We also have fear of failure. We have fear of success. All those pieces are in each person. But as we up level, we have to shift all of those up with us.
Yeah, I just had a recording of another podcast with these guys that teach people how to sell on Amazon. And they said one of the main challenges with the people that join the course is that they're not okay investing in themselves when it comes to buying something like a product and then selling it on Amazon. But then they're fine investing twice as much buying a couch for their house.
Interesting.
You know, so it's just like, I deserve a couch, but I don't deserve to make my life better in this way. It's very strange. What do you think about something like that?
Well, I think it depends on your values and your priorities in life. So if your priority is, I really want to get ahead, let's say just financially to make it simple, then you're going to value investing in the things that are going to help you get there. The farther along you go, interestingly enough, what I've observed is the more success you have, actually the more you're willing to invest, because you really realize that the fastest way to get there is to learn what somebody else has already figured out about the area you want to do. And that's actually the cheapest route. But at the lower levels, because you're being, you know, self-conscious about how much money you spend, plus a lot of times you're dealing with this world in which you're looking at, oh, well, I can figure all this out. Well, yeah, you can. It's just cheaper to pay for somebody who's figured out the piece you know how to do. And so I think the more success you have, the ironic part is the more you're willing to invest in yourself.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. It's much easier for me now to reach out to people smarter than me and chase them down than it used to be. And I'm not sure exactly why that is, because I would chase people down even back then, but it's just, I don't feel any fear at this point. I will email anybody, and if they jump on a podcast or on a call, I'm fine. I can talk to them. But then I have people that come in and they ask me about networking, and they're always scared of, what can I talk to these people about since I'm not really doing anything? And how would you address something like that?
Well, is the context that somebody's like at a conference and they want to approach somebody?
Basically, they either a conference or a meetup or even just joining a mastermind. And they think, well, I want to meet these people. I need these people, because if I'm around the same people I'm with now, I'll have the same results next year. So I need to upgrade my crowd. But I just haven't really done anything. And how do I approach them? What do I talk about?
Okay, so this goes back to your current level of I'm not worthy, I don't deserve peace that we were talking about. Because if you see somebody else and you put them on a pedestal and I'm not on the pedestal, it's pretty hard to feel comfortable approaching them. But if, on the other hand, you see them as another human being and you're going to approach them as a human being, and it's always nice to start out with a genuine compliment, like, you know, I really loved your book, or I've heard you on a podcast, or, you know, I've been to your website, I love what you're doing. You know, I was just curious if I could ask you a question. Or, you know, most people who are decent, nice people, which are the ones you really want to hang out with anyway, you know, are going to be nice about that.
It's true. And I found that the most successful people usually are the most helpful, which you would think would be the opposite. They have the least time, but they make the most actually effort to help out other people. I've also seen that you are pretty heavy into meditation. Can you kind of go into that? Because I'm also a big fan, but I don't think enough people are doing it or understand why you should be meditating.
Sure. Well, I really started it as part of a spiritual quest. And when I sold the initial companies, I went for a couple of months and lived at a Buddhist monastery. There's to the best of my knowledge, at least at the time, it was the only Tibetan Buddhist monastery. It's Pema Chodron's monastery up in Nova Scotia. And I stayed there for January and February. It was a 7-week closed retreat. And I went there specifically because I wanted to learn to meditate. And I had gone to Thailand and met Buddhists. And I thought they were, you know, seemed like really nice people. And I'd read Buddhist books. So, you know, that kind of took me in that direction. But then on a very practical level, once I learned meditation, I guess I had the great fortune is that the woman I was assigned to, you know, to be my meditation teacher, although we would meditate sometimes 12 hours in a day, but then I would have meetings with her and ask my questions and talk about it. The first thing she said to me was like so freeing. And that was because she says, well, meditation is just the practice of being present. So immediately it took it from something I was supposed to be perfect at. And then it told me it was a practice, and what the result was to learn how to be present, which once I did, you know, enough meditation, I was going, yeah, this all makes sense. I am getting more present. I am getting, you know, seeing as we talk about the experiencing the gap, you know, I'd start to have those kind of experiences. And so then it became very practical because I also realized, well, gosh, this opened up my mind. I have more space. I feel more real. I feel more connected to myself. I feel more authentic. And that brought me to realize that meditation is a very practical tool. So I started in that direction out of some spiritual interests of wanting to be more, you know, connected to my spirituality, and realized that it really, you know, can be approached purely from a very practical standpoint. And I think it has lots of implications for business because, you know, when I work with a client, there are two things that I want them to do in addition to the work we're going to do in their business. And that is I want them to commit to do some kind of physical exercise at least 3 times a week. And I want them to commit to doing at least 15 minutes of meditation. The immediate answer a lot of times is, oh, I don't have time for that. And I go, well, actually, you don't have time not to do it. Because when you meditate, you're going to get more present, but also you're going to empty your mind and open up more space. And when you do that, you're going to have more ability to observe the opportunities around you and for ideas to kind of come floating in. Because one of the things that I came to realize from meditating that I had been assigning my own mind as being the creator of all these thoughts I had. And I realized that thoughts kind of float through and they float out. And then I realized, oh, well, maybe these thoughts are just part of the stream of what's going on in life. And when I open up my mind, I have more opportunities for these great thoughts of what I might want to do to come streaming in.
How long did it take you to see some results from the meditation?
I really saw a lot of results in that 7 weeks, but understand that, you know, some days we meditated for 12 hours, which is a hell of a, excuse me, but it's quite an immersion if you don't have a lot of experience meditating, which I didn't. However, when you make it through those 12 day, it was 12 hours. It does feel like 12 days sometimes. You know, it's amazing, you know, the shifts that have occurred with you because you've got to sit there on the cushion. And part of the time, you know, at least then was just figuring out how to handle 12 hours of meditating, right?
I can't imagine. I mean, I'm really practical and I do my 20 minutes. And I usually think of meditation like exercise. So I'm just doing reps, right? So each breath is pretty much a rep and I'm training my mind to kind of control itself. But as with any workouts, you know, if you do them too long, you're going to burn out, I feel like, and you're just, it's overdoing it. So to me, 12 hours is, I mean, just sitting down, I don't think it's healthy for that long.
Yeah. Well, you don't sit for the whole 12 hours. Usually what you do is you will have rotations. So you'll do, let's say maybe 40 minutes of sitting. And then you'll stand, which I was ever so grateful for, and we would do walking meditation for maybe 20 minutes, which I actually love the walking meditation. So you're being very mindful about every step and your breath. And so your body gets some relaxation and then you sit some more. And then there'll be a break, you know, after maybe a couple of hours, you'll have a little bit of a break. And then you'll come back and then you'll have lunch. So that's another break. And then you'll come back in the afternoon. And, you know, do, you know, maybe 4 hours, but there might be a break and then you have dinner. But we would do those days all in silence as well, which I particularly liked because it allowed you to be with yourself and it didn't get you out of yourself because the moment you start having a conversation about all this, now you're really going to be analyzing everything. You're going to analyze it enough as it is. So that immersion takes you deeper and deeper and deeper into the practice. But there is a There was a practicality to alternating between sitting and walking and sitting and walking.
Have you ever tried isolation tanks?
I've actually never done an isolation tank.
Okay, that's one of my favorite things. It's like 90 minutes to an hour or hour and a half, sometimes even 2 hours. I would say about 2 hours.
And when you're in the isolation tank, do you have blindfolds on as well?
Well, it's dark. Okay, it's completely dark, and you have these plugs in your ears, because getting the salt water in your ears is not a fun thing once you come out. It doesn't feel good. So you're in complete darkness. You're in complete quiet. The temperature is the same temperature as your body, and you're floating without any effort. So it's like your body just does not feel any external stimuli at all. And your mind just starts doing kind of weird stuff after a while.
Yeah, I'm sure. What is the big result that you get out of that? I'm curious because I've never done it.
I find incredible clarity when I come out. It's kind of like being reborn in a way, because when you come out and your mind actually is used to it, so it's not the first time you go, it's probably after the fifth or sixth time, you come out and you feel like everything is brand new again. Mm-hmm. And you just feel like you start paying attention to more things. And at the same time, you don't take many things as seriously anymore, because you see how quick and easy it is to trick your mind into thinking that it's doing different things. It's, you know, because you can start hallucinating and different things in there. And you just see how easy it is to trick your mind. And just the concept of reality becomes a little weaker in a way, and your fear goes away. Well, at least that happens for me, because you feel like, well...
Now, are you saying that, I'm curious, your concept of reality, does that mean that, like, reality becomes less concrete?
I think it just becomes, like, it could be something else that actually you're thinking it is. So I've read a lot about the holograph, different concepts of how the world really is. Yes. And you start thinking that some of this stuff could actually exist, and you become more open to things such as, I have more control over what I want to do than I think I do, because maybe I can actually change things, like really change things based on my actions, when, you know, a lot of people are reactive, right? That's kind of how society is. But
right.
Yeah. And I feel like, well, I can change stuff. I mean, my mind is seeing things after just an hour in the dark, right?
Yes.
And it really thinks it's seeing things. And when I come out, I'm seeing something else. And at those different points, it doesn't seem that much different. And it just kind of, it makes you think differently. And it, for me, at least, the fear goes out. And I feel like this is kind of like a game. Like this entire world is a game. And why not give it my best shot? Why not just go for the things I want to go for? You know, I mean.
So is there a kind of a Matrix kind of experience?
Yes. You know? Yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, and it took a while. The first few times, I was not that comfortable in it, because, you know, just floating in there. Yes. And in the darkness, and you just kind of try keeping your mind from going off in different directions. You're just getting it back in, like, whoa, that's not.
Did you have any fear of, like, the claustrophobia or this closed-inness? Did that happen for you?
No, I don't. I love it. It feels like I'm floating through space.
Gotcha. Interesting. Yeah. Well, the kind of the immersions in the 12 hours of meditation we're talking about, it kind of takes you in a different direction than that. What I experience fairly consistently, and I even reached a point and I had a discussion with, you know, one of the meditation people about it, and they said, well, this is normal. This is what goes on. That my mind was actually melting, and that all these layers and layers and layers were kind of sloughing off, and I was getting deeper and more connected to me, and at the same time more connected to everything around me. And I started having, you know, kind of experiences of oneness, and then a profound awareness, which is actually the essence, you know, one of the essence pieces of Buddhism. And my interest in Buddhism, just to be clear, really actually isn't as a religion. I'm more interested in the philosophy and the practices, the mindfulness, because they all kind of fit for me philosophically. And I remember looking out the window at the ocean, because the monastery was on the ocean, and one day the ocean would be solid ice, or at least it looked like it was solid ice. And the next day it would be, you know, pieces of ice that were just floating all around. And then another day it would be complete ocean, depending on what the winds were doing that night. And the profound understanding that I came to was that truly the essence of life is infinite change, and that actually nothing is totally stable in life. We're always in this state of flux, and that everything is constantly changing, yet everything is connected. And that was more than an intellectual understanding. It was kind of a deep, profound understanding experientially, that I was beginning to experience that through my meditation experiences.
Interesting. So where you felt really connected, I felt more disconnected.
That's what I'm hearing.
Very different. I'm curious why that is.
But I would think that both experiences, because I'm all about experiences and you know, what kind of results do they create for us? And then, you know, what are our perceptions as a result of them? You know, I don't value, you know, like I recently was going camping, and people who'd known me for 20 years, you know, knew that I was the kind of person who might stay at a penthouse, right, at a hotel, but they didn't actually know that part of me. And they went, I had actually people text back, I can't even see you camping. I said, well, I actually love camping. So it was kind of like bizarre for me, because inside it was a piece of who I am. And I've been doing it, you know, pretty much since I was about 10 years old. But for me, camping and being in my North Face tent, you know, is no more or less valuable an experience than I've like gone and, you know, rented for a couple of days of presidential suite at the Bellagio, which is, you know, kind of the height of luxury. But one isn't more valuable than the other. They're just different experiences.
Yeah, I find the same thing. I'm comfortable in both. And I actually enjoy camping just as much as I enjoy being in a penthouse. It just depends on which day.
Right.
So
I want to go hang out with the earth and have, you know, I was camping a couple of weeks ago, and there were this whole kind of family of deer, and they're just kind of larking and having a good time about 50 feet from my tent, because they knew, you know, that, you know, I was in a national park, and they know that you're not going to hurt them. You know, deep down, they're not scared. And I go, you know, you'd have a hard time having this experience and having a campfire and just kind of sitting by it and being, if you were in a penthouse. This would be a very difficult thing to happen in a penthouse, right? But if you're, you know, out there, you're not in a marble bathtub either. So, you know, you're going to have to, you know, they're just different experiences.
It's true. And I feel like these cycles are maybe normal, because the wife always laughs. She's like, well, one time in let's say 1 month, you just want to be pampered the whole time and you complain about everything. And then the next month, we're pretty much, like you said, camping, and I'm staring off into the water fishing for like 10 hours.
Right.
And I'm fine.
I love water. Water is my big connection to the earth, and being by a stream, and I'm happy. I'm just, it's kind of like, it goes back to meditation for me. I don't have to necessarily be formally meditating, but I'm being, you know, and I'm feeling so much more connected and so much more space inside and real when I'm in nature. Nature's like a really great way for me to get very grounded and also get some relief from, you know, the world that you're living in, you know, like I'm in a loft and, you know, so you're in the cement and all of this is great, but it's, when I go out in nature, it's like, oh, the stress goes, you know, I'm not thinking about business so much. I'm just kind of being, and I come back a different person, more, definitely more alive.
When you talk about grounding, when people go into the business world, they start getting on this roller coaster. And you yes. probably know what I'm talking about. You know, you get the highs and everything.
I actually talk about that a lot.
Yeah?
Being an entrepreneur is like being on a roller coaster ride.
Yeah. And you know, when you're in the – it goes actually from the peaks to the lows quite fast, right?
So yes, unexpectedly, on days that you think everything's wonderful, and then at 5 o'clock you could be in a whole different place.
Yeah. So what do you tell people when you want them to, I guess, figure out how to be more grounded? Because the thing I found is I think I'm just more jaded now, and I just don't lean into the highs and the lows as much. And when things are going well, automatically I think, oh, when is it going to go to shit? And then when things are going really bad, I'm like, well, when is this going to pick up? You know, so it kind of happened in that way. But how do you tell people to deal with that?
So it kind of sounds like you're protecting yourself from fully experiencing it.
I think so. Maybe I'm
that's
just,
what I'm
hearing. I'm buckled in.
Yeah, you're kind of like buckled in. Okay, I've had enough of this ride. Well, I think, you know, I think one of the interesting things in my chapter about relationships, I hit on something that a lot of people go, oh my God, you got it. That when you're an entrepreneur, frequently you're in two marriages. And one marriage whether it's legal marriage or not, is like you may have a partner. And then another one is you have a relationship going on that is like a marriage with your business, right? Because we're just like, we're in a relationship. Entrepreneurs, I go, you've got to tell the other person that you're in a relationship with, and this is a way of answering your question, just so you know, that they signed up for a roller coaster ride because that's what you're on and that's what you're going to be doing. And so one, you got to be sure that they can take the roller coaster ride, because if not, it's going to be a pretty difficult relationship over time, because they're going to be petrified all the time about whether the mortgage payment and the kids are okay. And you're going to feel constrained to go out there and really do what you wanted to do. But on the other hand, I think one of the balancing things that those of us who take more risk and are willing to take the roller coaster ride, and in fact, we're probably attracted to the roller coaster ride in the sense that we want the adventure. We want to go do something. And this is just part of the deal. I think that a lot of times the best relationships balance with somebody else who's more the rock. And it doesn't matter if it's the man with the woman or the woman with the man, but that the other person actually isn't living at that same risk level, that you might be at a 7 or 8, but they might be at a 2 or 3. And I think that can also be an external grounding. But with yourself, I think the meditation and really focusing on what is most important and keeping your eye on your whatever is your number one priority right now, that in and of itself can bring a certain balance to you, because you can go, okay, that didn't quite work. Like right now I'm doing some new marketing initiatives and we keep iterating. It was going, okay, well, that didn't exactly get us. It's getting a little bit of what we're wanting, but it's not completely getting us what we want. So let's keep iterating it and just realize that this is I think a great frame is that we're on this grand experiment. And business is about experimenting. Marketing is about experimenting. You go and you put stuff out there and it kind of works or it doesn't kind of work. And you shift a variable and you go, oh, turns out they wanted that color blue. I didn't know that. Well, now I know. Well, I'll make all my ads that color blue and see how that works. It's a grand experiment. And when you kind of step back and remember that it's on an experiment and that when everything's said and done, it's about living an amazing life, and you keep focusing that you want the amazing life, then it has a context as opposed to it's your whole life. And that's when it can really take over.
I think there's a lot of fear in the beginning, especially when you're not making enough to, right, I guess, pay the bills, to feel so free and experiment, where you're just like, well, I just need to make this money to pay my cell phone. And instead of thinking how to have people buy and feel comfortable with you, you're more just like, I need to make this sale. And I think that's a very, very hard spot in the beginning. And people can create all types of bad habits at that time that are hard to shake off later on.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the most important things, and it's not what most people necessarily focus on because they focus on a lot of other things, is when you're starting out, I think that a lot of entrepreneurs would be so much better off if they gave themselves 90 days, that within 90 days they're going to start putting money in the bank. And so if they just had some way that early on they were going to focus on, okay, I'm going to figure out one way to put some money in the bank, then you're beginning to move in the right direction, as opposed to I want to build the empire, because a lot of people want to do that first, but they're not selling anything. So if you remember you're in the business to sell something and you start from that perspective, that can be a lot more stabilizing, because the truth is, if you've got cash flows coming in, it takes care. You may need to straighten out your systems. There may be a lot of things that need to be fixed. But if you've got cash flows coming in, at least you have a business going.
That's true. What I also find is that people start 4 or 5 different businesses.
Yes, and that's I remember one guy who came to me and wanted to do coaching with me. Now, this was very humorous to me. I'll tell you what was the real humorous part, given I'm an attorney, is that he was bragging, and he was a young guy in his 20s. I've got 6 businesses. Now, I'm already thinking this is a little insane, right? Because you ought to do one and really learn how to do it. And then he sent me over, which he had clearly, copied and pasted. He did not have an attorney. The most ridiculous non-compete clause, confidentiality clause that I had ever seen. It was 5 pages long. And he insisted that I was going to sign this. And it included such things that if I agreed that he could get an injunction against me doing any business with anyone, if he even alleges that I've violated the confidentiality agreement. And I said, first of all, I'm not going to do business this way. This is insane. And you're trying to build six businesses, choose one. You know, so I didn't end up coaching him because I wasn't going to end up I wasn't going to take on the risk that one day he just decides to shut my business down. I said, I don't think anybody's going to coach with you under these circumstances. So he told me he didn't even have any clue about practicality of business. But I think it's the trap that somebody reads a book called, you know, a book on multiple streams of income, and they buy into this idea, oh, I'm going to build this empire and I'm going to have multiple streams of income. Well, fine. When you get to seven figures, let's talk about that. But why don't you choose one niche based on that difference you want to make and create one product? And for that first 100,000, let's focus on how you sell that. And if you choose the niche that has a big enough problem and they have a large enough size of population and they have some money in their pocket, and you build something that really solves their problem, and it could be a service that really solves their problem, and you learn how to sell that, that's all you need to get to six figures. And people want to create this whole smorgasbord of products, and it's just not being focused. And my formula for creating wealth that, you know, is, and I'd love to give that book to everybody if they'd like for free, is conscious, focused action. And you've got to be conscious of this one number one priority. And the more lean you are, the less that you do, and the more focused you are, the truth is, the more successful you're going to be, the faster.
I think there are a lot of confusing concepts right now going around. Some people are saying pick a really small niche, and that niche will usually not be enough to go to six, seven figures. Some people say choose a really broad niche, but yeah, then you're just one out of a million people in there, and no one can recognize you. Then some people say don't ever put all your eggs in one basket, because like Amazon, they could shut you down at any point. And then yeah, some do multiple streams of income, and then you get this six business type of guy. So how do you respond to that?
Yeah, I would respond, I'm going to say conscious focused action is your answer. The less you do and the more focused you are, the more you're going to achieve. And so the answer on the niche is that you want to create a focused niche. And at the same time, at the early stage, say, well, where do I want to go with this? Now, if your ultimate goal, and this is what you want, is say a six-figure business, then all you need is a niche where it's going to be easy for you to be able to carve that out. If you want seven figures, that niche may or may not work. If you want to go to 10 million, so you want eight figures, then you need to make decisions and analysis up front and go, oh, don't invest in a niche that you really can't go the distance with, because you're going to be studying them, you're going to be learning about them, you're going to be getting their problems at a nuanced level, because the only thing anybody's going to buy from you is a solution to their problems. So you've got to really understand that group. And if you're going to invest the time and energy, they need to at least be large enough so it's reasonable that you're going to be able to build what it is that you want to build. And that's why I start, you've got to know where you want to be, let's say in 3 years. Now, in 3 years, you may be adding another niche, but let's get clear about where you want to be in 3 years and make certain that you're starting out on a path where the niche that you're choosing can take the journey to get where you want to go, whatever that is, in 3 years.
Well, what I think is happening now is a lot of people are in 9-to-5s. They maybe lose their job, or their job just, they're not happy with it. They look at all these blogs online, you know, digital nomads, laptops on their knees in front of a beach. Then they watch Shark Tank and they're like, well, everyone says to just jump into the business. And when someone does that so fast after watching Shark Tank, there's no way they can think of an eight-figure problem or the right niche. They're just like, well, I just want to make money. Like, everyone's like on that whole, I want to make money and I want to be by the beach. And I think it's right, the wrong mindset, but
yeah, I think it's completely the wrong mindset, because first of all, if you don't really start out with why are you doing this? What is that difference you want to be doing? What are you going to be passionate about in your life? And all you're doing is looking for what's the cookie cutter way I can make money. And what your real answer is I want to be by the beach. I can guarantee you that being by the beach will not fulfill you. That it's only by doing, because I made money the first time doing something that was not fulfilling to me. So I was able to learn that lesson very quickly. That if you're not doing something that you would do for free and get up every morning and be so excited that you get to do this, then you're on the wrong track to begin with. And you've got to start in the right place and get clear about why you're moving forward in a certain direction. And I think there is a lot of misinformation out there that lures people into kind of a false understanding of what this is all about. Being an entrepreneur is about adding value to the world. That's the great gift that we get as entrepreneurs. And we get to choose. What is that value that we are going to get so excited about that even when everything doesn't work out in the day, because I guarantee there are going to be lots of days like that, that you still, you know, brush it off and go, yeah, but I'm really excited about helping people in this way. And I know when I add value to someone's life that their life is better off, or I add value to someone's business, you know, and I'm doing something that really solves their problems and I'm learning how to help them in a way that really works for them. And by golly, you know, then they're exchanging value with me by giving me money I put in the bank. That's what being an entrepreneur is really all about. And if you're missing those elements, you're just off chasing an opportunity of saying, you know, and oftentimes it doesn't work at the scale you're doing it at, or, you know, it worked for one person, but it's not necessarily going to work for you. You know, you're just looking for an answer about how to put money in the bank. And I get it that if you lose your job, you've got to figure out how to replace that. But wouldn't it be nice if you started off on a journey that you actually wanted to take?
But don't you think that's too hard in the beginning? As you notice yourself, your first business or maybe two, you were not fulfilled. And most people are not. The first business or two, you learn the ropes. You're usually taking every customer that you can. Then slowly you figure out, sure, I want to, you know, work with these guys and not. It's, I don't think it's that simple in the beginning.
Yeah, but Tom, what difference is it? You're still going to have to go through all the business mechanics. You still have to go out and understand your population. You're still going to have to understand how to market. You're still going to have to understand to sell. None of that gets thrown out. But all I'm saying is, why not start out in a direction where you're at least doing something that you enjoy and fulfills you and that you really feel like matters? Because it's just as easy to go out and in fact, I think it's easier to say, hey, I'm really kind of passionate about this. Now, let's figure out how I could do a business model helping people that want a solution that I'm capable of providing to them, and take that business model and make that the business I'm making, as opposed to I'm just going to go and try to do that, doing something I'm not even excited about, because then you're missing all the passion piece. So I think you're at a disadvantage.
I still feel like that's the best case scenario. In the beginning, if a lot of people would have to go in that route, they would never start a business because they can't figure out what that one thing's going to be. It's just too big of a decision to make initially.
I think it's a decision that you can make, and then as you refine your life and your direction, you go, oh, and I kind of like this part of it even more than I like this part. But it's really just answering a question that you've got to answer for your life anyway. And what is my life about?
I would bet right now that 90% of the listeners have no idea. Because I know
I bet right now that I could get anybody there in 2 to 3 weeks by just taking them through the process, or they could read chapter 4 in my book and do the exercises and come to a pretty good idea, a good enough idea to get started.
Yeah, so there's a process, though, because even when I talk to my friends, and one of the hardest questions we always kind of get and or give ourselves is, what is it you really want out of life? And that's the one that stops everyone. It's much easier to be like, oh, what's the way to market this product? Or how do we get into this niche? Those are simple things, you know, but what is it do you really want? And that's the one that stops a lot of people, so... I will look at that chapter 2, and I'm not sure if I have ever answered it really.
Well, I think that it is an important question to answer, and that I think in a short period of time you can come up with some initial ideas about it. And then as you take your journey, you're going to constantly refine. Like, you know, I thought Conscious Millionaire and Conscious World's my nonprofit. I said, oh, these are my real callings, and they are, until I started podcasting a year ago. And within the second week of doing recordings, I kind of ended the day, and I think there were 4 or 5 recordings, because I started from the very beginning doing lots of kind of batching a lot of recordings in a day. And I stood back, and right out of my mouth came without any thought was, oh my God, I think you've just had your Oprah moment. Now, I had no idea what that meant. I'd never said that before. I never even thought it. And so I just stopped kind of in my tracks, you know, sat back and I said, well, what did you just say? You know, it was like a message to myself. And the first thing that came to mind was, well, Oprah made billions of dollars just talking to people. And that's what you just did. And then at a deeper level, and I said, and wow, you really had a good time. You really love being on this microphone. And then I realized, oh my God, this is even a deeper part. And within 3 weeks, you know, being a good attorney, the attorney sticks up his head and says to me, right, we're having a little dialogue here, says, why don't you call it Conscious Millionaire Media, a division of Conscious Millionaire Institute? I don't have to go incorporate anything different, you know, and I know I'm just writing down words. And then I very quickly realized before the end of that day that, wow, I think part of what you're doing in your future, and it hadn't even launched, right? But I'm kind of getting these inklings, is you're kind of going in the media business. So you're asking, well, why are you starting so many podcasts? Because right now we're figuring out all the pieces, and then I may add some more hosts because I've noticed people doing that because I really like this stuff. And so I realized very early, oh, here's an deeper thing than what I understood before. I knew I liked waking people up to their potential. I knew I liked giving them tools. But now I'm discovering a specific path within the path that I really resonate with in many ways more than anything I've ever done. And I'm a guy trained as a tax attorney. I love numbers. I love playing with spreadsheets. And I'll always be a numbers geek. But I got to tell you, if I could only do one thing, I probably give up the numbers as much as I'm a numbers geek if I could just talk to people and have meaningful conversations like this.
The challenge I see is when it comes to podcasting, right now a lot of people are trying to find their voices on podcasts and people are starting podcasts left and right. When you have a business initially and you're making money and you can start a podcast, then it's all fine. You can build it up and you have a lot of time. But when people don't have that business and they start the podcast and then they can't monetize it, and even though they love it, it's not bringing them money. Right. I find that that's a big challenge. And how would you talk to someone like that, that it's their passion, but they can't monetize? Well, they maybe can, but they don't know how to.
Yeah. And I think it is still difficult unless you want to be one of the few, you know, people who is extremely successful selling, become a podcaster, and it's the answer to your life, right? So those are the only people that seem to be making lots of money out of podcasting right now. So that's an example of starting something, but you didn't sit and think, let's go back to the formula, conscious focused action. The conscious part is looking at where do you want to go? Who are you and where do you want to go? And what are your paths for getting there? And if in that first 12 months, your goal is to get to 100,000, you've got to ask yourself, is the podcast going to get you to the 100,000? Or if you're wanting to do the podcast, how much you want to do the podcast and why are you doing the podcast and how does it contribute? Like, are you going to meet people that you can do strategic relationships with? Is it going to attract a population that otherwise are going to be interested in what you're doing? And still stay focused on what is the path to get me to the financial goal that I want. And the podcast may or may not play into that. And if it doesn't, then I'd say don't do it if that's the reason you're doing it. It needs to fit a business model if you're doing it for a business reason. And you need to be clear about what are your outcomes for it.
Very cool. JV, if people want to reach out to you and find you, where could they go?
Well, two ways. I'd love to give them, we've been talking about conscious focused action. I'd love to give them an ebook on that. It's taken out of my big book. It's at consciousmillionaire.com/wealth formula. And they can also go to consciousmillionaire.com. You can find my two podcasts that are current. If you own a business, I do private and group coaching with six figures and up. You can go to the coaching tab and fill out the application. It's absolutely free, and I'll do a free consultation with you. And there are a lot of free things on the site that'll give you an opportunity to get started and look at what it is that you want to do in terms of your business, or if you have the business, where do you want to take that business?
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect, Lee Bell. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.